Welcome to the Jazz Shapers podcast from Mishkon Dorea. What you're about to hear was originally broadcast on Jazz FM. However, the music has been cut due to rights issues.
This is Jazz Shapers with Elliot Moss on Jazz FM. In partnership with Mishkon Dorea. It's business, but it's personal. Listening colour.
Welcome to Jazz Shapers with me, Elliot Moss, bringing the shapers of the business world together with the musicians shaping jazz, soul and blues. My guest today, I'm very pleased to say, is Sandrine Zainferon. I hope I got that right. Well, she'll tell me afterwards if I did. Founder and CEO of Vinteria, the online vintage and pre-owned furniture marketplace with a million hidden gems. Growing up in China and France, it was while working in finance in London that Sandrine found herself scouring vintage dealers for a particular piece of designer furniture to match, apparently, her cat's yellow eyes. Frustrated with the time it took and how you couldn't be sure if furniture sold online was authentic, Sandrine realized there was a need for an online marketplace where time-stretched people could more easily search and buy pre-owned furniture and homeware, not to mention spend hours looking for it and having fun. In 2015, Sandrine quit her job, and the following year she taught herself to code, launching with friend Leslie Fournier, who's since left the company, the initial iteration of Vinteria. Aiming to offer a more sustainable alternative to the environmental impacts of fast furniture, Vinteria now offers curated vintage, antique and secondhand furniture, art and home decor, bringing together over 15,000 independent sellers, that's hot off the press, from more than 30 countries. I was really happy when you launched your business. It was back when 2015, we said. Yeah, 16. Yeah. 2016. Was it fun setting up a business coming out of the world of finance? Truthfully, now you're looking back.
Great fun, because, you know, like, I think finance is quite a secretive world. And it's to be my first job when I was a sales on a brokerage desk. It was very competitive, really macho, and really about, like, give as little information as possible if you meet a competitor. And then when I decided to learn to code, to start Vinteria, I got immersed in the tech world, where I discovered open source, how, you know, heard of company who are exchanging employees to share best practices. I was like, you know, like, oh my God, how is that possible? So it was really refreshing. Yeah.
What made you go into finance in the first place?
So I started my grande école, which is kind of university, in 2003. So, you know, at the time, Wall Street, trader, everything, it was very cool, which might be strange for people listening today, but I think that really probably is the best you could get out of business school. So I really was dreaming about becoming a trader, doing very high-stake transactions. So I specialized in market finance, learning about option and derivatives, and had an internship in London to complete my degree. It was a 6-month internship, and they offered me a job in the end. So, you know, I came in 2007 and has stayed since.
Do you think that your childhood, you were born in China, but you went to France, I think, at the age of 5.
Correct.
Do you think, and look, communist China as was, and still now, I guess, is such a different, for, you know, you obviously, you grew up in China at a very young age, very different to growing up in France, very different to growing up in the UK. Do you think that sense of simplicity of your life, your parents wouldn't have been from the same world, do you think you were running towards something and away from something? Is that, have you ever analyzed why you wanted to earn, you know, I mean, it's a lot of money in finance.
Yeah.
Was it by chance, or was there something a little bit deeper?
Obviously, I wanted to run away from my parents' life.
Did you, though?
No, I think, you know, my parents grew up in very difficult conditions. In China, obviously, my dad always told me a story about how he had to eat, you know, tree bark, because when they didn't have any food. And so they were always working very hard. And when they went to France, they had to do a lot of sacrifices. So, you know, like between the age of 2 or 4, I stayed at my aunt's in China when my parents were in France, because they couldn't bring me over. And then when I came at 5, I just, you know, I could see them trying to juggle different work despite being highly educated. My dad has a PhD, et cetera, and they were, like, you know, sometimes taking shift at restaurants. So it really, I think, taught me, obviously, the importance of hard work, but also made me really want to reach financial independence so that I didn't have to, you know, just count all the coins and just like look at all the discounts before going to the grocery. So, and I really wanted to also just get out of my city. So I grew up in Lille, which is not such a small city, but it just felt really small. So, you know, like I think the idea of going to finance in London or New York just made like felt the world more accessible.
Obviously, what you just talked about in terms of that need for financial independence, that need for earning money, what you discovered, as you said, is that that wasn't really working for you. The move into the world of design, why? I mean, obviously, you saw a gap and you wanted to buy this yellow chair. We'll come on to that and all that. But what was it, just that, or was there something else that was bigger over the years that had occurred to you about that world? Was it simply opportunistic?
It's a good question, because if you had asked, you know, told me 10 years ago that I would be running a furniture business, I wouldn't have believed you. I think, you know, like working in finance was intellectually challenging, so I learned a lot. But after 8 years, I just felt like, you know, I had reached what I wanted to get out of it, which was a learning, and realized that just spending the rest of my life making rich people richer wasn't really something I wanted to think about, you know, the day I die. Mm.
And the money for you, just as a thing, the money for you itself, you know, at some point, does it just not impact how you're feeling about the world? And I don't mean that because you were rich beyond your wildest dreams, but because was there a connection with the money, or was it starting to be irrelevant and unimportant to you?
Definitely. I think to quit my job and start a business that was made possible because I had, you know, like savings from my job. So just make it easier as a decision. And I think, you know, once I remember I spent my first bonus buying a Balenciaga bag, and then like bought some like nice shoes. But then it just become really boring, not that exciting anymore. So maybe I realized that kind of materially I had what I needed and just wanted something a bit more fulfilling, feeling that, you know, again, I think just thinking about death, that I could think, okay, I have made a good use of my time and have no regrets. And
that was a real thought process, was it? That actual point about, you know, I want to leave a mark on the world, because often I meet people and they do say that, but with you I think you kind of go, I didn't want to do the financing, but I'm not sure you had this grand mission to save, you know, millions of tons of furniture from landfill, even though that's what you're doing now. But
yeah,
did it just evolve?
It just came a bit organically, I think, because at the same time I had just moved home. We used to live in this, you know, like more modern style flat in Shoreditch, with exposed brick, you know, bigger windows, and like with quite modern furniture. We moved to our current place in Highbury, which was like, you know, really our kind of family home forever.
The home of football as well, if you're an Arsenal fan like
yeah.
me.
Just so
for the record, Sandrine.
Yes, yeah, and yes. We are Arsenal supporters as well.
Excellent, you can stay.
And so my modern furniture wouldn't fit in the new space. And I spent a lot of time trying to sell some of the more modern furniture. Had like some bad experiences with, you know, someone, I think, who had bought a lamp on eBay from me, came, wiped his muddy boots on my carpet, and like locked himself in the toilet for 15 minutes. I thought, okay, that's not really worth it. And also thinking, okay, I want to have something a bit more unique for our family home. I don't want to keep going to buy some flat pack where I know that most of the neighbor are going to have the same. And as you mentioned, it took me 3 months to find this perfect yellow armchair to match my cat's eyes. And I said, okay, that's very not efficient. How can we make it better? And I didn't realize, but, you know, in each neighborhood, there are, you know, 3 or 4 local antique and vintage shops, but they're not really visible online. And if you walk into the shop, maybe you're going to find 50 or 200 products at best. So it's really hard to find the perfect piece when you're looking to buy something. So I'm just trying to find a way to make it more efficient and bring it all together online.
And we're going to hear exactly how you did that very shortly. Sandrine Zengferon is my business shaper. She'll be back in a couple of minutes. Right now, we're going to hear a taster from the Michigan Innovation Series, which can be found on all the major podcast platforms. Lida Kellett invites business founders who share their industry insights and practical advice, ideal for those of you thinking about starting your very own thing. In this clip, focused on the fashion industry, we hear from Ashita Cabra-Davis, founder of peer-to-peer fashion rental app By Rotation.
The Michigan Innovation Series. Inspiration from founders of cutting-edge businesses. In association with Jazz Shapers, with Michigan Dereya.
So for somebody looking to enter into the industry, whether that's the tech and or fashion industry, what advice would you give to them?
I think this advice applies to both industries. It's really focus on the product and your customers will come. I think, you know, we've seen it happen a lot, even in the tech industry, that people are like, they're spending too much money and time on the wrong things. You know, they're focusing a lot on how things look on the outside rather than actually building in the inside. So it should be about the quality of your product, and then the customer love comes very organically.
The Michigan Innovation Series. In association with Jazz Shapers, with Michigan Dereya.
Jazz Shapers on Jazz FM. In partnership with Michigan Dereya. It's business, but it's personal.
You can enjoy all our former Business Shapers on the Jazz Shapers podcast. I always want to go ta-da after that, but I just did then because I just can't resist. Sorry. And you can hear this very program again if you pop Jazz Shapers into your favorite podcast platform. My guest today, I hope you've been listening, is Sandrine Zengferon, founder and CEO of Vinteria, the online vintage and pre-owned furniture marketplace. So we were listening before to you talking about all this time it took to find the yellow chair. Really, there must be a better way. What I love about when I researched you was the fact you went, yeah, and then I learned how to code. Yeah. Of course you did. I mean, obviously. I learned how to code, and then that gave me the ability to kind of figure out what this thing might start to look like. And as I looked around some other things I read about you when I watched you, Sandrine, I thought, you like learning. You are a voracious learner. Where is that from? Why?
Yeah, I do like learning. I do like a boot camp, so coding boot camp, yoga boot camp. Where it's coming from, maybe I was an only child. I mean, I am an only child, so, you know, just spend a lot of time reading. So maybe that's where it's coming from. I get bored very easily, so maybe that's also why a way to just keep things interesting.
And when you learn how to code, and you suddenly went, hold on a minute, there's a way of doing this. Was this your sort of love affair with technology? Or had you already become a bit of a techno fan?
So, yeah, I didn't know anything about tech. But when I got the idea for Vinteria, I asked one of my friends who is a VC, like his advice on getting the tech created. Because, you know, I could use something like Shopify, but that wouldn't have sold for the seller side. It was just e-commerce. So we're thinking, like, should I hire a developer, work with an agency? And he said, why don't you learn to code? You know, you will decide if you find it interesting.
Which language was it? Python or something?
Ruby, mostly. Ruby and obviously HTML for the front end and JavaScript.
And what does Ruby do?
It's a framework. Ruby on Rails, which I think people just describe it as a very pretty language. It really like sounds like a plain English, so it's quite easy to read. And I did a 3 months coding bootcamp. And
you enjoyed it?
Oh, I loved it. You know, with coding, there is always an answer. There's always a solution. That was probably the easiest part of the business, you know, because you don't have to deal with people.
I was going to ask you, tell me about the people thing. Obviously, you're half joking. But what is it that you find trickier with people versus code? She's now worried about how honest she's going to be.
No, as I said, you know, with code, there is always a solution. It's not black and white with people, right? And I think my biggest high and my lowest low have always been related to people. I mean, I'll start with a positive, right? I think whenever I've seen customer or seller being really happy about the service and seeing like the impact it makes on their life, or seeing a team member grow and, you know, really developing their role has been the most satisfying part of the job. But at the same time, I think like some nightless sleeps or, you know, anxiety I had has really been related to people. But I think it's like about how also my relationship with people and how I've learned about myself and my emotional reactions to things have evolved. So yeah, but all part of a learning process.
The other thing you've obviously learned, apart from the coding, which sounds like fun and you like it more than humans because, you know, they don't get upset coding lines of code, is the world of design. I mean, there's one thing liking a yellow chair. There's another thing having an eye for all the other things that you sell. Are you into that? Have you enjoyed that journey of learning about different designers and learning about different eras? Or is it just the product and you're not really connected?
Yes, I really enjoyed it. Just simply because, for example, the first listing created on platform, I listed them myself. So, you know, I learned a lot about the different designers, eras, words that I had never heard before. So I think, yeah, it was really interesting and to understand more about like how some designer or like trend influence others. But yeah, I wouldn't say I'm an expert.
No.
Far from that. So we need to rely on the expertise of our dealers.
And why do you think Venturia has done so well? Because it's a busy marketplace. What's special about the way it works? What have you designed to help this business grow? And it has grown, and you're very well funded. You've raised money significantly. You've done a deal with Channel 4 Ventures not that long ago. There's all you're doing interesting things. Something's happening. What can you put it down to?
Thank you. I mean, I think one thing I've learned that there is no silver bullet. So there is no escaping hard work on many things. And a lot of things that work at a time can just stop working. So you need to find other things and adapt. So I think, you know, continuously learning and iterating and staying close to the customers. I mean, you know, seller and customer is really important. I think the times where we've been maybe like, you know, ignoring some feedback, that's how performance declined. So I think, yeah, kind of, you know, making sure that the basics are here. So, you know, having a great quality, unique pieces of pre-owned furniture is very key. I think back in 2018, we tried to add new furniture because some of our customers wanted that. And we ended up realizing it was a mistake and diluting what we want to do. So we reverted the decision. And obviously, you know, making sure that the service a customer receive and seller is always aligned with market expectation. You know, obviously, consumers are more and more demanding. They expect, you know, fast delivery, high level of service, easy returns. Everything has to be frictionless. So continuously iterating the offering and making the online purchasing experience is as smooth as possible is key.
You mentioned, you know, you got to know when things aren't working. They work for a bit, then they stop working. Are you generally a very adaptable person? Would you say that? I don't think you are. I think you're good at identifying. I'm so naughty. I'm jumping in, but you're good at identifying when things need to change. But are you actually like that?
No, I'm laughing because I think I'm just like restless,
okay.
And actually. You know, I think sometimes I've been guilty of driving too much change and too often. And I've learned over time the importance of stability for the team as well, I think, because I'm getting so excited about new learning, insights, trend opportunities that, you know, I have made in the past some decisions just that were a bit confusing for the team, maybe. So, yeah, I would say pretty adaptable. I would have made quite quick decisions, for example, like when COVID happened. But I think I need to...
Slow down,
yes.
Slow down with my final chat with Sandrine Zhang-Ferron very shortly. And we've also got some music from Cécile Maclan-Savon. Lots of me trying to speak in a nice French accent. That's all coming up in just a moment here on Jazz Shapers. Don't go anywhere.
Jazz Shapers on Jazz FM. In partnership with Mishkon Dorea. It's business. But it's personal.
I'm Elliot Moss. This is Jazz Shapers, and my business shaper is Sandrine Zhang-Ferron, who's the founder of Venturia. I often think with categories where you're trying to establish a new behavior, it's quite tough to change people's behaviors from buying new furniture. And there's lots of new furniture in the fast furniture world. You in this world are doing it. There's people doing it. I had Shosh Kazab on from Kidswear Collective talking about pre-loved kids wear. There's many people now looking at vintage and things, and it's becoming much more mainstream. The work you've done with Channel 4 and Channel 4 Ventures, who have invested time, given you time on air, in return for equity. Has that seen an impact in your business? Is the mainstreaming, the legitimizing of vintage working for your business?
Yeah, massively. We've seen, so last year, we launched our first TV campaign in September, and we've seen our brand awareness in our target audience increase by over 50%.
Wow.
So it has been massive. And I think, you know, originally our sweet spot customer are more in London and Southeast, but we've seen our awareness grow as well outside of the UK. So it's great, I think, to help people realize that it can be very easy to find a good quality of secondhand furniture online. And like that it's not just for, you know, collectors or like fan of antiques.
And what's it like dealing with a Channel 4 Ventures, which is a different view of venture capital? They're essentially saying, here's some stuff we can give you for the equity we want to take. Has that been an interesting process, or is it just the same as dealing with other VCs?
Oh, it's been the nicest process.
Has it? And why is that?
I think, you know, like Vinay, the head of Channel 4 Venture, is a big antique fan. So he already understands the product, he's a customer himself. So I think that helped. I think they're very pragmatic. So, you know, like all the terms were really straightforward. There was no long-winded due diligence process. So they're all very reasonable people. That was very
good. That's good. And has that been the case, Sandrine, with regard to other money you've raised? the laugh is one thing. The eyes say something as well.
I'll say that I'm not a fan of legal paperwork, and there have been always many more pages than necessary, I think, to get to the point that we got, in my view. But I understand, you know, like investors have also to protect the interests of their own investor. So,
but we hear, you know, the 2% of every pound is going to women-backed businesses, which is a ridiculous number, incredibly low. And here we sit on International Women's Day and we say, how can that be so? What's your experience been of being that woman raising money? Has it made any difference? Has the gender point been relevant?
I've never been a man, so I don't know.
That's a fair point.
I think, you know, like probably we are all humans, right? So we tend to trust people we are similar to. And understand, I think that we, you know, it's more like in our category, which is furniture, interiors, design, and 70% of our customers are women. When I've talked to investors who are mostly men, I think often they don't necessarily see the opportunity because everything is a very niche opportunity. Maybe there are just like a few very fanatic collectors who'd be interested in the proposition. Whereas obviously, if I'm talking to a woman who has been through kind of a process of doing an interior project, understands the pain point of sourcing good quality furniture, etc., she will have more empathy for the customer problem and better understand the size of the opportunity. So I would say maybe it's more depending on the category.
Hmm. And honestly, was there an impediment to you raising the money because you were a female founder, do you think? Because you raised a lot.
It would be hard to say exactly, right? But I think that there have been some occasions where I've been at events or dinner or even like in meetings with investors where, you know, bringing either my tech lead or finance lead, and where the investor would be just looking at them and not me. But aside from that, I think, you know, being clear about the vision for the company, you know, having a good understanding of the metrics and the growth engine of the company and having a big market opportunity are important, right? So maybe women, like female founder, would be maybe less aggressive in their approach to their vision. So I will always maybe just to say things I can back, where like, you know, maybe men who feel more comfortable just inflate some of the number or vision. But maybe it's more of a personal thing than gender thing, so.
No, I think you've probably got a point. It's been lovely talking to you. Thank you. Thank you for your time and good luck as you build this fabulous business. Just before I let you go, what's your song choice and why have you chosen it?
It's The Masquerade is Over. So I love immersive shows and I'm a big fan of Punch Drunk.
Oh yeah, me too.
Who has done like, you know, incredible show like Sleep No More or The Drone Man. And so this song is kind of the closing song at the end of the show where all the lights start to light on the stage, and the performer takes some member of the audience. I walk them out, and it's an incredible memory.
The Harp Tones with Masquerade is Over, the song choice of my business shaper today, Sandrine Zhang-Ferrand. She talked about her restlessness and how that drives her, and the fact that she loves change, but that change also needs to be tempered, and that her team have said pretty much that. She talked about loving coding because there is always a solution, whereas with people, it's never black and white. And how true is that? And finally, she said there is no silver bullet. She talked about hard work, and she talked about the fact that you just need to do lots of things, and you also need to change when those things aren't quite working. Really honest and really great stuff. That's it from me and Jazz Shapers. Have a lovely weekend.
Jazz Shapers on Jazz FM. In partnership with Mishkondareya. It's business, but it's personal.
We hope you enjoyed that edition of Jazz Shapers. You'll find hundreds more guests available for you to listen to in our archive. To find out more, just search Jazz Shapers in iTunes or your favourite podcast platform, or head over to mishkon.com/Jazz Shapers.